views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Tuned in to Race Treaty on the Black Talk Radio Network, and here's your host, Brother Anaje.
Good evening. This is Onaje Muweed, host of Race Treaty, that comes to you every Friday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we attempt to educate our people in our community to what human rights are, how do they apply to us, and more importantly, what actions are we taking on the ground to bring them into existence. Even though we use ISERV, the International Convention to Eliminate Racism, as the primary document, we also look at other documents that could be helpful in terms of explaining our situation and what solutions may be possible for us. Tonight, we have one such activist, Dr. Mustafa Ansari. He's the Dean of Students of American Institute of Human Rights, political author, former political science professor at the College of Al-Medina, studied law at the New College in California, and also studied at the New College in California School of Law. Dr. Ansari recently published a plea for victims of American slavery to seek a legal status change in the essay entitled African Descendants of the United States Change Their Status. Dr. Ansari writes in the article, "A colonial power of the United States cannot unilaterally impose a national and identity status on African descendants, descendant Americans. Political and identity status must be chosen or elected under international law. Status is everything, and the United States cannot impose a single minority status on indigenous people," says Dr. Mustafa Ansari. "African descended people of the United States are indigenous, which is consistent with history, democracy, international law, and early American population studies in pre-colonial and post-colonial eras, which clearly show that the people called Indians are actually African descendants," so he writes. So we are now like to welcome Dr. Ansari to this show this evening. Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening, Brother Anaje. And I thank you and Brother Scotty for having me on.
Well, thank you very much. Something happened on October the 15th, 2017, as I understand it, that you were one of the organizers for a conference that was held on a former slave plantation, and as an NGO, you were able to bring lawyers, international professionals, human rights defenders together to facilitate the first conference on Confederation and human rights remedies. So please tell us first a little bit about yourself and tell us about your organization, and then thirdly, tell us about this conference that you organized.
No problem. Well, first, I am an international law professor. I teach and train at the UN Human Rights Defenders, which are lawyers, judges, prosecutors, not law students, but advanced law students and advanced international paralegals to become human rights defenders. A human rights defender is tantamount to an international lawyer. They are prepared to be able to file suit in all of the international forums and organizations and arbitrations, hearing boards, to be able to facilitate remedies, human rights, pursuant to human rights violations. We also train monitors who are upper echelon criminal justice bachelors, political science bachelors, journalists, or activists with great writing skills to be able to understand the conventions, the principles and declarations of human rights, to understand it at its core, to be able to articulate it before legislatures, before government bodies, and before the United Nations, and in support of the human rights defenders that they perceive. And since 2009, we've had the institute, and just for the last 3.5 years, we've been training, and we have a first wonderful class of UN human rights defenders who are excellent, and so much so that they were the facilitators for the conference in Mississippi. The conference in Mississippi was a gathering of indigenous people and tribes and nations of African descent, Hebrew Israelites. The Moors were there. Remnants, some of the of Republic of New Africa was there. The Muslims from Confederation of Imam-Dinar-Amin, which is about 13 different mosques in about 13 different states. The Black Indians, about 5 brands of Black Indians from Oklahoma, they were there. And all of this conglomeration of African descendants coming from the genus of one people signed a confederation agreement amongst themselves, which would allow them to be independent in their particular organizations and tribes and nations, but to confederate on general issues of autonomy. This allowed us to establish a insular state. So what we did in Mississippi with the signing of that realization, we became a state. So right now we are in the transition period, which is a transitional justice period, to now put meat on the bone, which is the institutions necessary to fill out the elements of the state, which is and the territories and the planning of the territories and their limits, and the establishment of a police force, judiciary, and recognition by certain countries. So that's the process that we are now as a fledgling state. So it has already began to draw in more and more to the state. We were there at the Million Women's March and several other affairs in across the country, and we will be probably for the next 3 years until we can get a full cassette at least have all of the people of African descent able to exercise their consent or not consent to a state, that we would culminate with a in the end with a constitutional state. which is the highest form of the state could attain. That would be recognized. So we have turned the corner, and so right now we're looking to obtain about 30 other train about 30 other defenders and about 60 monitors to be able to protect the state and to be able to bring it into fruition by going into the different international venues and travels to the several states to obtain recognition, to opening up international and ambassadorial trade ties and relationships with third countries. So this is the process to self-determination. It's one of the courses that we teach at the institute, which is a monitoring course on self-determination, indigenous status, and natural rights. So it's one of the courses that we teach, and what we teach we apply. So we have been on. We are very pleased with what's occurring right now, and we are adding other Indian tribes, Black Indian tribes. There's a lot of Black Indian tribes that are unrecognized, and of course the majority of the African descendants are unrecognized and have been misplaced into a simple minority status, which is tantamount to being an immigrant, because there's the white American status, then there's the Native American status, and then there's the simple minority status, which entails gays, women, people with disabilities, immigrants. When we are in that lower status, when in historical fact and in actuality, we are native to this country. African Americans constitute about five bands of different population movements that are in our blood veins. From the earliest population of all of the Americas, the African descendant was the African who all Americans, Native Americans descended from, were African descent. Making a population swell to the Americas from out of East Africa and Southeast Asia during those millennial times. And this is not Mustafa and Sarah's saying this. This is scientific data and fact. I've been writing a book about this for about 17 years to trace the population of of the Americas to see who the African American was, and there's many blood different blood trails running through us. Nubians were the third population wave. We found their artifacts around the Olmec statues. The Olmec statues, and a lot of your viewers and listeners rather are familiar with those old statuettes, very heavy stones, carved out of stone, 9 feet tall and about 9 feet across, of absolutely phenotypical Negroid features in Mexico that predated and the Mayans and the Aztecs, the indigenous people who populated Central and North and parts of South America. And of course, North America. That was the original African presence. That and we have scientific proof because I'm a lawyer. So what we do is any lawyer, any serious archaeologist uses evidence. And one of our top experts, was Dr. Ivan Van Sertima, who has denoted 12 different types of evidence of African, the original African Native presence. And we can also, through some of that research, look at other population waves and artifacts that were found around the Olmec statues which were moved in from Egypt. So we have evidence that the Egyptians were in the Americas. This was long before Columbus. In fact, this is what made up the American people. We had Phoenician artifacts. So there was a combination of a lot of different, and this was pre, this also takes into consideration the Asian influence, which came at least 3,000 years after we were here first in the Americas. And this is all evidence. This is all evidence that we would present if need be, and our defenders would present if need be. I don't think that can be overcome. That's scientific evidence that all of these, that the majority of scientists have agreed to, and that is fact. So that's not the fact that is overlooked as to the total combination of what is African American is that the figures of imported Africans into the United States is extremely low. Shipping logs say it was 388,000 Africans that were from West Africa, and this is the fourth population wave of Africans. But this fourth population wave that makes up what we think is us was very small percentage. 388,000 over a period of about 200 years, which means there was about 1,800 at the most Africans imported into the United States. So when we look at who the African American is, we have a resounding argument that we are native, and we have the right to land, we have the right to autonomy, control over our schools, control over our decision making, our territories, and our areas that we majority populate, those areas. So under international law, we are very satisfied that the status change that we just made will be upheld and supported. And we urge the African descendants that have not been privy to this information, this historical information that we have, to be open-minded to it, because it is the new, up to 20 years. It's not extremely new, matter of fact. We've known about the skeletal remains since 1975. The skeletons were misplaced in Sao Paulo University in Brazil, because the oldest skeletal remains were found near the airport in Brazil, so Belo Horizonte district. And under 13 tons of debris, they found 13 different skeletons of Africans, but when dated, predated the Asians by about 3,000 years. So we are very confident that we can overcome any arguments as to why we cannot legally change our status. So it's really up to the African Americans and their professors, who we're now bringing in. Well, we're bringing in our second conference convention in Atlanta in April. We'll be bringing in our professors, our history professors, political science professors, criminal justice professors, the economists, bankers, to give us an evaluation of this status change. How much would it be? How much is it worth? Because from what we understand now, that if we execute status change, and we totally executed this, we would be the 12th wealthiest entity in the world as far as wealth is concerned. If we did that, because we live in a rich country comparatively, and we have income coming in and out of our hands, mostly out of our hands, to the tune of about $1.3 trillion a year. So what this means to us is a way out of this grip that has been on, and this boot that's been on our neck for all of these years. So we are looking forward to executing and continue to execute what the status change for all African descendants, city by city, state by state.
So brother, you really said a lot there. That's a whole history just in terms of the last number of points you made. I want to go back and say, what international treaties are you basing these goals upon?
It's international conventions, which is a multilateral treaty of all of the nations in the world. All of the nations in the world agree in the convention. They all stand in assembly, 190-odd nations, because it was 1996 when it was culminated. The Convention on Civil and Political Rights is one of them, that says all people have a right to self-determination. Then there's the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, because self-determination, when we're talking about human rights, is at the very core of human rights, because what a human is and his right to self-identify and his right to be free and freely choose that is the main anchor of human rights. It all emanates from the right of the human being. So this doctrine is the core of human rights, and it runs through many conventions. The Declaration on Indigenous People, there's a convention on Indigenous People, ILO 69, that sets forth not only our rights to self-control of our territory and our tongue and our culture, but also it sets up protections for resources and that sort of thing. So there's full protection in conventions, in declarations, and it's the very principle, core principle of human rights. The human being has the right of choice, and a human, which means in our condition, the United States can't choose to put us in a status. That's slavery. That's classism. As well, it's not democracy, and in a democratic setting, the people are free to choose who they want to be, their nationality, and the right to your nationality, and the right to choose your nationality, is a convention. It's a convention that stands by itself, and then it runs through three other conventions. So the right to be free, to have free choices, your free will, is the core of human rights, and we have not been allowed to do this. And I was listening to, and I want to really clarify by this for your audience and for you as well, because I know there's a huge reliance on the Surge Convention, the Convention Against the Elimination of Racism and Xenophobia and those sorts of things. We think that's an important convention, but we think that the main convention is the main law that deals with our issue is not so much racism, which is an effect, but colonialism, which is the cause of racism. And there was in 1960 a declaration on the convention on decolonization and the rights of people on peoples, and the United States didn't put us on the list, they just acted as if we were just part of them, and they were fully integrated, and we were good, and the whole thing. And we should have been put on the decolonization list because we are colonized. We were heavily colonized people. We were colonized four times. We were colonized by the French, by the Spanish, by the French, by the English, and the United States.
Let the audience know we're speaking to Dr. Mustafa Ansari. He's dean of the American Institute of Human Rights. He's just finished hosting a conference in Mississippi on October the 15th, and there they wanted to bring different people and nations together to speak about the condition of African descendants. He goes on to say that African descendant nation and the United Nations Development Framework, thereby to discuss six thematic areas of country development: the historical context, democracy and human rights, that's two; economic development, trade, investment and job creation, that's three; education and culture, that's four; peace and security is five; and six will be sustainable development, quality of life, and the environment. In addition to Atlanta, other cities slated for the conference that were actually supposed to attend were from New York, Chicago, Washington, D.C., Oakland, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, and Houston. So we're going to take a station break at this time. Those who are on the line, certainly stay tuned, where we can be speaking to Dr. Ansari. Can tell us more about the conference and what plans are ahead of him at this time. Stay tuned.
Bass in your face, not an 8-track, getting it good to the wood, so the people give you some of that reaction to the facts that I kick in a stick, in a stay around, point to the joint, put the booty down, going to get to the roots, and giving it up, so turn me loose. Then again, I got a story that's harder than a hardcore course of the Holocaust. I'm talking about the ones who are going on. I know where from that dumb being dumb for the base motherland, the place of the drums, invaded by the whack, titty whack, it fooled the black, it left us faded. King and Chief probably had a big beef, because of that now I grit my teeth. So here's a song to the store, but the shape of a snake and a smile that went along with that.
Get trusted! Get trusted!
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
Good evening. This is Onaji Moweed. You're listening to Race Treaty. Come see you every Friday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We attempt to reference different human rights conventions, mainly using the international covenant on to eliminate discrimination. But we have a guest tonight, Dr. Mustafa Ansari. He's the dean of the American Institute of Human Rights, and he is bringing up the question: might it, in fact, even be better for us as a people to reference those documents that deal with colonialism, and therefore participate in the process of decolonization, whereby a group of people can be recognized as, in fact, an African descended nation. Just before the break, he was making that point. So we're going to ask Dr. Ansari to speak a little bit more about the convention. What kind of principles does that convention lay out for those who are interested in using this particular line of reasoning?
Okay.
Dr. Ansari.
Well, thank you, Brother Naji. The Decolonization Convention, let me give you a little background and how we became aware of it, how I became aware of it, was in 1962. It was actually held in 1955 and 1960. It was our first international expert. And research experts, which was Malcolm X. He noted, after analyzing, he's a great political analyst, and after he had analyzed the situation in the United States, the Congress and the Senate the Congress and how it worked, and the non-difference between the Republican and the Democratic Party, because both of them both of them had their foot on our neck, just by different styles. And he noted that in order to alleviate ourselves from this condition of racism and oppression, that our case is not a case that we can handle through insular means of reform and non-discrimination and civil rights. He said our issue is one of human rights. So that is the difference between our approach and the CERT convention. The CERT convention is for discrimination. That's which means that's a reform. That's to reform the discriminator. Have him somehow non-discriminate himself, not become racist. And the CERT convention lays out some good things about violation and different things like that. But when you get down to the workability of it, and the brothers say, well, what's the tangible effect of that? Tangible effect of that is almost an advanced civil rights approach, which would leave the decision maker as to whether he's going to discriminate against you or not in the hands of the discriminator, which we don't think that's a wise thing for us to do. We think that it's best to move away from the discriminator into our own areas where we can become social equals. And as becoming social equals, landowners and those who run the society, living side by side with the Americans, that over time would be a better tool against racism, because everything at that point is even Steven. We have our own areas, we have our own economy, we have our own schools, we have our own police department, our own fire department, our own businesses, that sort of thing. It's totally zoned for us. Our tax zone is zoned for us. We have our own economy. So, and if we live side by side with our inner city, say we zone Chicago, the African American living on south and west side of Chicago, and then the whites had their side. We would, in Chicago, which has a base of $6 billion a year, the population of Chicago, which is a mess right now politically and with a lot of things, we would obtain $2.4 billion per year in our areas to cover the expenses, because the arrangements that we would make with the United States are the same arrangements that the Indians or the Native people have made with the United States, which we would have reserved areas, we would have our own government, we would control our own school, our own police, the whole thing that business people do, and we would have this $2.4 billion that's allocated for the public property, the police, the schools, all that. We still part of that tax base. We could do a much better job and have a much higher quality of life and reduce crime to almost by raising the wealth of our community and adapting them and reinvigorating them and having the children, their behavior will become much better. We think that we can do that by using the decolonization process rather than the reform approach of the CERT convention. So we urge you to rethink the approach, because there's two different approaches. One is not hyped up, but because it's a very good convention, the CERT convention. I totally approve of it. But the application, I would like to have it applied on a national level, where we have our own economy and the United States has it. And those things that we have a problem with, we can apply CERT to. But as far as life...
The question I have is, in order for of people, to my understanding, to achieve nation status, they would have to first have a plebiscite. They would have to have internationally supervised, monitored voting process that would give the people, because you're talking about choice, how do you see a plebiscite process coming into existence?
A very good question, my brother. A plebiscite is actually the last step. The what we're doing now is the first step, the declaration of independence from the United States and a consent to have to be a part of the African. It's like that's your first step. That's like, when we look at this country, the Declaration of Independence was in 1776, but the plebiscite wasn't until 1787. That's the birth of the constitutional government. So they went from 1776 to 1887. It was an 8-year span before the United States became a full democracy with the Constitution. Our process is the same way. It hasn't, you know, and that's, you know, you start with the consent of the people to be dependent, independent, and that's what when you look at our website, and that's what the Black Indians and the Hebrew Israelites and the Moors and the Muslims were signing together, which was a declaration to be independent, declaration of independence, and a consent to be part of the of African descended nation federation. That's the first step. Now, that allows the process of which we're in now, of putting together a interim government. And
now, you know, by chance, do you happen to have that declaration handy?
Yes. In fact, that's what gives us power. Every time we obtain a signature, looking to change signatures from big organizations, law firms, the NAACP, maybe sometime down in the future, other Muslim groups, other Moors. Every time we sign, we become more of a nation. So that gives us power. So yes, in fact, we're going to put it up on our website so that people can do it digitally.
Can you share with us some of the content of that declaration?
It mirrors, except for in detail, the Declaration of Independence. It talks about like the English, the American Declaration of Independence from England said that over a period of years. And ours is much over a period of many, many years of the mistreatment and the horrors and the exploitation that we, in essence, seek to become our own people, and that we declare ourselves independent of the United States, and that we also declare ourselves to be a member of the African descendant nation. And so that document, and we have more signatures than the United States had. They only have 57 signatures of farmers, white farmers, that did the Declaration of Independence. We had more signatures than that, and more. So when we did that, We became a nation, and a nation that has to be perfected through the plebiscite, which is at the end. We become an interim nation, and then that interim nation has a duty, an obligation, because it's not an elected nation. It's a nation that's members of the Black Indians, the Moors, the Hebrews, whoever the signatories are. They send one to Parliament, so we have a Parliament, but that still is not quite a constitutional nation. The plebiscite contains the right to establish a constitution, so the interim government has a duty within a reasonable period of time to hold a plebiscite, so that now we can have elected government, because that's what we really believe that will strengthen our nation and strengthen our people, is to have representative government from the neighborhoods, from wherever we live in, to send one of the best, one of the most courageous, the most intelligent, the most amenable person, brotherly or sisterly person, to Parliament. When they get to Parliament, from Philadelphia, from Chicago, from Florida, wherever, from the Black Indians, from more, whenever they can congregate, just like they did in Philadelphia, with the United States Convention, Thomas Jefferson and Hamilton and those gentlemen, our gentlemen and young ladies will congregate and bring forth a constitution. As a result of the plebiscite vote, which would be saying, yes, we want you to proceed. Yes, we want a nation. Once the people give us that by majority vote, which is the plebiscite, we go into constitutional assembly and create the last part of it, which is the constitutional democratic government. And this is what the our experts and our lawyers have confirmed to be the process.
You know, it's with regret I didn't learn of the conference until just today by the station founder, Brother Scotty. So I'm just learning of it, and I would have to surmise that there's probably many other people who didn't know about the conference and might want to know more information. If somebody wanted to be in touch with you and find out about this movement that you have initiated, how would they do that?
We have three websites. The main one is AD Confederation. That means African Descendant, ADConfederation.com. And there you can sign up to obtain information for a newsletter, which will contain a lot of information on what a confederation is, and our different moves through the United Nations, and our different press releases, and information on identity, and why this vote is so important. You can obtain it by getting on the information list. You'll be able to, and once you become a member of the Confederation, we're going to continue with webinars and conferences. We'll be going from just within Jackson, Mississippi, which is very close to Tougaloo College. There our brother Chokwe Lumumba, his son now is the mayor of Jackson, Mississippi. The RNA was the Republic of New Africa. Brothers in Mississippi control about half of the state, and we did this on a site of Tougaloo College, which was which was built on a plantation we'll be going from there to Atlanta, Georgia, in the springtime, Oakland, California, Chicago, New York, Houston. We're going to make the rounds to obtain the consent of the African descendants to statehood, or non-consent, whatever the votes come up to, and that's how we're going to proceed. So it's a full effort, and we want to see it until its end.
Dr. Ansari, people are talking about this new film. It's called The 13th, and it shows that many of our people have in fact been unjustly convicted, and the percentage is so disproportional that it shows really slavery, a modern day slavery. So did the conference at all address victims of the prison industrial complex that we can say is human trafficking and is slavery. And if you did address it in the conference, what were your, what was the results or proposed actions of redress?
Oh, we addressed it in the best way possible. We addressed it systematically. Because when you look at the complex, the reason why it's so oppressive is because the other man is in authority over the judicial system, over the prisons, over the correctional systems, over the economy. So what we did was we changed the game. Now, as the Confederation is, you won't have that in our areas because we are the police, we are the courts, we are the judges, we are the bailiffs.
I can see what you're saying in terms of futuristic plans, but in terms of what can happen
now. This is not futuristic. No, what this is right now. Let me just get you into the clarity of what I'm talking about. As soon as we obtain the majority vote in whatever area, we control the correctional systems. The correctional systems in our area, they now come under, we nationalize, they come up under our control. We negotiate with the United States on release of those prisoners and juveniles into our custody as our nationals. When you have a treaty, which this would be a end of a war, a treaty with another country, the first thing that you negotiate is the release of prisoners. So, in fact, we represent a lot of the political prisoners and have worked on their cases. So we definitely know what you're talking about. But we're talking about the strongest systematic thing that you can do to nullify it, and that's to take your prisoners out of their jails, because you have become a nation. So that's how we break it. Now, we have in our educational, human rights educational approach to corrections is very different than the oppressive military approach of the United States, who treat us as if we're in a war zone. Our educational our process for offenders is to rehabilitate them and bring them back into society, not to necessarily punish them, because they always, at some point, we have to come back into society. So our juveniles and our adult offenders, we want them. We want them out of that jurisdiction, and we have the right to obtain not releases from them, but from transfers from them. So this is the best way. We're talking about two million prisoners. If there's a better way to do this, Brother Najee, let me know. But we think that that's the best way to change that whole process, that whole military industrial prison mechanics, is by taking our people out of it, by our jurisdiction.
So what is the next step that this organized movement is going to bring into existence? What's the next step?
Signatories. We're going after signatories. Is the name of the game. The name of the political game is signatories. How many signatories can we obtain, and who, and the quality of the signatories? If we can get the lawyers, the businesses, the esteemed scholars, as well as a large percentage of the nationalists and the Pan-Africanists and the Moors and people who are tired of being oppressed and can think logically and want to do something for themselves, as we obtain those signatures, that's it. We become more and more of that nation that can be very significant, that can go to number 12 in the world with our wealth and with our technology. So that's what we that's our next steps, is we're going around the country to obtain signatures. And when you go on our website, you'll see people signing things. This is the power transfer.
Please give that website to the listening audience so they can go on it and see exactly what's being said.
Yeah.
What is that website?
Yes, sir. It's www.adconfederation.com. And then we have our the other one, which is important, because in order to do this with the most efficiency, we want to train at least 30 more lawyers, international lawyers, are those people that can excel to that extent, and 60 more human rights monitors to obtain the right type of legal form, UN legal form, that can get us through all of the advanced things that we're going to be dealing with as we proceed down this scale to the constitutional government, which is WWAIHRrights. That's AAIHRrights. AIHRrights.com.
We'd like to announce that Dr. Mustafa Ansari, Dean of the American Institute of Human Rights, has been our guest tonight on Race Treaty on October the 15th in Tupelo College in Tupelo, Mississippi. There they had a conference to establish the first conference on Confederation and Human Rights Remedies. The goal of the conference was to convene a broad-based cross-section of African-descended community leaders from among the Black Native Indians, Moors, Black Nationalists, Muslims, Christians, Hebrews, and college students to educate and organize them into a vanguard of an internationally recognized nation. Participants came as far as Belize and Guyana, and on that autumn weekend, participants formally signed a Declaration of Self-Determination, thereby confederating and declaring the formation of African descendant nation. So Dr. Ansari has been speaking to us tonight in that he has said that this is the start of a nation-building process based upon status, which includes an election of designated to effectuate self-determination. There, they intend to follow United Nations conventions on self-determination and recommendations cited in the report of United Nations Working Group of Experts on African Descendants. So for the first time in history, African descendants can choose who they are and increase their wealth, improve their education system, reduce crime, and become the 12th wealthiest nation in the world by a plebiscite. And we spoke about that throughout the interview tonight. So Dr. Ansari, any concluding comments you'd like to make at this time?
Look and be as logical as possible, because we really don't have any alternative. There's been a study out that says that by 2053, I think it is, that we would have zero wealth. And so what this country's white folks in this country have outlined for us is nothing. And that's what they have been giving us all these years. And it's time for us to do our thing. Or as Mr. Farrakhan said, it's time to separate. And that means time to move on into a different status existence. And so we urge the African descendants who are listening to go to the sites that get on the list so that you can obtain information on your identity, on your democracy, what rights you have, and how to protect you and your children's ability to have a good quality of life in real time. So that's what I like to leave with your audience and with you, my brother. And it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on. If at some other time or whenever you call, definitely will be glad to come back on again and talk to Brother Onaje. And I extend my other greetings to Brother Scotty Reed for having me on tonight. Thank you so much, my brother.
Thank you so much. This is Onaje Weed signing off for Race Treaty. Stay tuned. Come back and listen to us next Friday, and know that our shows are recorded or taped, and you can archive them. You can go to archive to reach them and pass the word on to your family and to your friends and to the community at large. Thank you so much, and good night.
Good night, brother.